It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area and worldwide at WABCBizRadio.com. This radio show, Mind Your Business, on the legendary 77 WABC, is all about you. Every single week, we seek out and interview C-level executives and business leaders from all types of industries and ask them the questions that are on your mind. Just to list off some of the industries and professions we've covered, how about the retail industry? We interviewed Steven Sadoff, the former CEO of Saks Fifth Avenue. We talked about entrepreneurship, financial planning, marketing and advertising, time management, hiring, social media, corporate culture, strategic planning, real estate, and so many other industries and professions. Stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business, where you'll gain solid business advice and strategies to get you ahead in today's business world. First, we open with some thank yous. Special thank you to Pesach Trapper, the show's producer, Meira Beitler, the content creator, and Dina Student, who's handling the production side of things. Also, special thank you to the team at WABC, Jose, Matt, Chris, Brian, Justin, and the entire team at Bottom Line Marketing Group, who plays a great support role. Also, some thank yous to our recent guests. We had Jason Robinson, Director of Marketing at UPS. That was an incredible interview. Jack Canfield, author of The Success Principles and co-founder of The Chicken Soup for the Soul. Joe Hart, President and CEO of Dale Carnegie Training. Dr. Adrian Boise, Chief Experience Officer at the Cleveland Clinic. All the previous episodes are available by going to WABCBizRadio.com. WABCBizRadio.com. On the website, you'll find the link to listen to all the previous shows. There's actually some video available of which was selected highlights from a number of the shows. It's all available by going to WABCBizRadio.com. Well, let's get to tonight's guest. On the line, we have none other than Todd Buchholz, former White House Director of Economic Policy, economist, hedge fund manager, and best-selling author. Some background about a very distinguished guest. Todd was the former White House Director of Economic Policy under George H.W. Bush. For those millennials out there, that's Bush 1. He is the author of numerous bestsellers. His newest book is The Price of Prosperity: Why Rich Nations Fail and How to Renew Them. Todd has been featured in so many publications, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Time, Reader's Digest, so many others. He is also a regular commentator on CNN, ABC, Fox, PBS, NPR Radio, and rated as one of the 21 top speakers of the 21st century. Todd has delivered keynote speeches to over 100,000 people in the past year alone. Therefore, we encourage our listeners to stay tuned for tonight's edition, where we're going to talk about a variety of subjects. We're going to talk about Brexit. We're going to talk about what makes a nation wealthy. We'll talk some politics. With that intro, we give a very warm welcome to Todd Buchholz. Todd, how are you?
I'm doing great. After that introduction, I think I should retire or something. You were nice enough to read everything my mother had written down. Very kind of you.
Well, first of all, thank you for taking the time to join me here at tonight's edition of Mind Your Business. I was particularly intrigued and really wanted to get you on the show after I am a subscriber. I'm going to do the Rush Limbaugh thing here and take out my newspaper. The July 1st edition of Wall Street Journal, when on bookshelf they featured your book, The Disunited State of America. And then when I got my hands on the book, first of all, you have a great sense of humor. Got to hand it to you. The tone, the humor, it comes through on the pages.
Well, you know, that's important because we're dealing with some pretty significant issues that can be intimidating to people.
Yes.
So I think it's important to show at least a little bit of humor on the lighter side, so not everything sounds so dreary. And if you think about it, some of our greatest leaders have actually had great senses of humor. And
yes.
You know, most recently, Ronald Reagan loved
yes.
to tell jokes and was quite the raconteur. And Franklin Roosevelt on the Democratic side had a lot of charm and would yeah, put his opponents on the defensive simply by being wittier than they were. So anyway, it's, yes. I think it's important, especially as an author.
Yes.
You don't want to bore people.
Yeah.
You know? And we're up against big issues, debt levels and Brexit and the like. And gosh, we could make it like a graduate student seminar and drone people to sleep, but I don't think that's a very effective way of communicating.
Absolutely not. And in fact, with that, I think we'll jump right into Brexit. Now it's just roughly 2-3 weeks behind us. What's your take on it? Let's jump in. And I guess for those that have been sleeping under a rock, Brexit, the UK left the EU, but your take on what happened there in Europe?
Well, as you say, the UK was asking themselves, do we really need to be part of the European Union? And historically, the Brits have not thought of themselves as Europeans. That English Channel is not very wide in miles, but right. Culturally, it's thousands of miles. In fact, I recall when the train tunnel that
yep.
connects France to Britain was first opened up. There was a big ceremony, a ribbon-cutting ceremony, and the French president at the time was François Mitterrand. So he comes through the tunnel, comes out the other side to the UK for a big celebration, and what is he greeted by? He's greeted by hundreds of British marchers holding signs saying, "Froggy, go home! Froggy, go home!" So you start off with this within the British mind, this question, are we European? And then what the Brits have lived with is really 20 years of bureaucrats in Brussels, Belgium, regulating nearly everything from the size of milk containers to the shape of bananas that can be sold.
Wow.
And then you put on top of it, the fact is, over the last 6, 7, 8 years, the European economy has been an absolute disaster, and the Brits have been lucky not to be dragged down to it. So that's kind of, you know, the attitude going into it. And so it's not that, even though the pollsters told us that the Brits would not vote to leave, I don't think it was that big a surprise that the sentiment against Europe was strong enough that they wanted to walk away.
Wow. Now, what does it mean for the world economy and the U.S. economy in particular?
Well, the first question is, what does it mean for the British economy?
Yes,
of course,
true.
When the vote came out, all sorts of people were saying, oh, my God, it's a disaster. This is going to be a crash in British stock market.
Right.
And it is certainly true the value of the British pound has declined substantially against the U.S. dollar. But actually, British stocks, the stock market's higher than it was before the vote. You know, I take a pretty simple view of this, and you have to ask yourself, if the Brits leave the EU, will rich people no longer want to drive Rolls Royces? You know, will tennis fans not want to watch Wimbledon?
Right.
The fact is, the value of a country comes from the hard work of its people and their ingenuity and what they produce. And there's no reason to think that Britain is going to become a less productive, less attractive place. Now you ask, what's it mean for the U.S. economy? You know, I don't think the stakes are quite that high for the U.S. economy, because Britain is a big trading partner. It's the fifth biggest economy in the entire world. If anything, it may lead to more Americans deciding to drive over to JFK and take a flight to the UK to do some shopping at Harrods. But I don't think it becomes a, you know, terribly important event for American consumers.
Interesting. Now, on that note, and I know this question has been asked a million times, what's your take on other countries that are presently part of the EU to make a similar exit?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the follow-up is then, what is Britain going to do about this? So here's the issue. The Brits are going to leave the EU. And then the problem is the European Union bureaucrats are scared to death that other countries will follow, wealthier countries,
right,
such as Denmark and the Netherlands. And so if the wealthier countries like Britain, Denmark, and Netherlands leave, then kind of it brings down the overall average. Who's left? Well, of course, the Germans and the French are left.
Right.
But then you've got the poorer countries, the Portuguese, the Spaniards, the Italians, and so on. So the European Union does not want to make it too easy for Britain because that'll encourage the other countries to leave. So they're making it kind of tough. They're saying, well, you know, yeah, we'll negotiate with you, but we're not really in a hurry, and we don't want to make it so easy. So that becomes a bit of a challenge for the Brits. And, you know, Europe is very concerned that it's just going to be the weaker states that will be left. And, you know, as we all know, they've had a tough enough time dealing with the Great Recession and dealing with the euro currency and so on, that it becomes, you know, pretty precarious. So there's a little bit of whatever metaphor you want to use, the game of chicken, hardball, I don't care, any metaphor. But the Europeans are not going to make it so easy for the Brits that it encourages others to follow their lead.
Right. Now moving along to your new book, The Price of Prosperity, Why Rich Nations Fail and How to Renew Them. Maybe you could share with the audience, why do rich nations fail?
Well, yeah, Yitzhak, lots of people have written about how poor countries fall apart.
Yes.
Syria, Sudan. Yeah. We can come up with a pretty long list of poor countries that have pretty much dissolved and unraveled. But very few people spend much time thinking about rich countries that fall apart. And I was thinking about it not so long ago, because my wife's grandparents had recently celebrated their 81st wedding anniversary.
Nice.
Which makes them among the longest married couples in America.
Right.
And
them and Jimmy Carter.
Sorry?
Them and Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, but you know what? My wife's grandparents have done more for peace than Jimmy Carter ever did. So anyway, Grandpa's 102, Grandma's 100. And I thought, wow, when they were born, there was an Ottoman Empire across northern Africa and the Middle East and Asia. And there was a Habsburg Empire across Middle Europe. And now those empires are gone. I've never met an Ottoman. I've never met a Habsburg. And yet those were powerful, controlling empires. You know, millions of people under their domain, large swaths of geography, gone, vanished. Why? And it turns out it wasn't because, oh, their economies fell apart and they went into a terrible depression. No. They fell apart when, in fact, their economies were growing. And so I tried, in The Price of Prosperity, I look at those examples and other examples throughout history and ask, what is it that unravels wealthy countries? And so then I got to come up with an answer. So in The Price of Prosperity, I identified at least five forces that consistently show up throughout history, end up dismantling wealthy countries. And unfortunately, these five factors are affecting the United States today. Now, does that mean that our future is the same as the Ottomans and Habsburgs? Not necessarily, but it doesn't mean we're at risk. You bet. Mm-hmm. So what are those factors? The first is this, and it's a bit of a paradox. When countries become wealthier, people have fewer babies. If you just think about 100 years ago in America, it was fairly typical for families to have 4, 5, 6 kids, and certainly there were families with 9, 10, 11 children. Well, that's pretty unusual these days. Why? Because in the old days, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, a huge portion of the population worked on farms, and you needed farmhands. You needed children. You had children that were crawling on their bellies into coal mines, earning an income for the family. Well, when countries become wealthier, you don't need children to go to work. And so you have few. Now, what's the impact of that? Well, when you combine it with longevity, that is, people living longer, it means you've got fewer workers to care for the older people. So what does that mean? It means you need immigrants. Well, then you raise the question, when you have waves of immigration, can the social fabric stay together? And that's what we're being challenged with today. So that's factor number one. I'll go through them very quickly.
Yeah, sure.
We can follow up. The second is trade, globalized trade. You can't be a rich country unless you are a trading country. If you cordon yourself off, you become very poor, whether like North Korea or Cuba during the era of the embargo. So you've got to trade. The problem is, when you begin trading, it becomes difficult to retain your national identity. The Boeing 747, which was unveiled in late 60s, early 70s, mm-hmm. pretty much 90% of it was made in the USA. Now you look at Boeing's latest jet, the 787, and less than half is made in the USA. And that's part of the globalized system. So we've moved from made in USA to made in, whatever's cheaper. And that makes it tough for a country to stay together. Third, as countries become wealthier, they borrow more money. They become more indebted. In fact, Japan today is probably the most indebted country in the world, and it's not because Japan is a poor country. It's a rich country. The U.S. is a very indebted country, more so proportionately than Mexico or Russia. So that's an issue. Then you've got the question, or the fourth factor, is the work ethic. When countries become rich, everyone has a comfortable bed, but fewer people have a reason to get out of it in the morning.
Yeah.
And we see that in the U.S., the labor participation rate has been falling for 20 years. The number of people claiming disability has been rising sharply. So that's a challenge. And finally, how in a multicultural country, and every rich country ultimately becomes multicultural, how do you maintain a spirit of patriotism? And, sadly, we see in the United States the fractures among the population. So when you combine those five factors, you've got a recipe for a rich nation that unravels, and you've got warning flags. And that's what I'm trying to do, wave some of those warning flags. Of course, you referred to the Wall Street Journal review, and the guy was so nice. At the end of the review, he said, I had too much good humor to be a wholly effective doomsayer. So I don't think of myself as a doomsayer, but I don't mind waving some flags and saying, hey, we're going to run out of time unless we start addressing some of these issues.
The voice that you hear is that of Todd Buchholz. He actually was a former White House Director of Economic Policy under George H.W. Bush. He just came out with a new book called The Price of Prosperity. In fact, he was kind enough. One lucky listener is going to win a free copy. All you have to do is send a text to 66866 and put in the word bottom line as one word. Send it to 66866, and you'll automatically be entered to win a free copy. Well, actually, again, if you're not lucky enough to win the copy, the book is available online, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and at bookstores nationwide, so no worries there. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Did you know that dissatisfied employees cost American businesses over $300 billion each year? Now there's a solution. TeamAhead.co. Team Ahead is a complete solution to help companies of all sizes build a positive corporate culture. Team Ahead helps today's thought leaders make their vision a legacy. Team Ahead's comprehensive approach helps you communicate your vision and engage your employees through many channels, including print, digital, sweepstakes, video, events, social media, and a custom website. Call 800-890-1807, extension 3505, to find out how Team Ahead can transform your business's corporate culture, leading to greater productivity and revenue. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co. Team Ahead will enhance your workplace productivity, boost morale, and successfully communicate your vision. Don't let your company's strongest asset be its biggest liability. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co to fuel your winning workplace today.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile-friendly? And does it have the 2016 look? Well, look no further than websitewithbrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit websitewithbrains.com.
And we're back, the Mind Your Business Show here on 77 WABC. My guest this evening is Todd Buchholz, former White House Director of Economic Policy, economist, hedge fund manager, and best-selling author of the new book, The Price of Prosperity. Well, Todd, in your book, you talk about the discovery that nations are just as likely to unravel after periods of prosperity as they are during periods of depression. I know you touched on it before, but why is that the case?
Because there's a paradox that comes with prosperity. Prosperity introduces all sorts of factors that poverty does not. I briefly mentioned longevity. I'd mentioned the fact that my wife's grandparents were 102 and 100 right. and 100 years old, respectively. That's wonderful. That's a miracle of medicine and a miracle of a modern economy. But it also means they're collecting Medicare and Social Security for far longer than it was envisioned when those programs were created. So, for instance, in the 1930s, Franklin Roosevelt and his advisors were honest and they were smart. They set the retirement age at 65. Now, why did they choose 65? Because in the 1930s, the average 65-year-old was dead, Yitzhak. The life expectancy was less than 65. So, of course, the actuarial numbers, the program worked out just fine. Franklin Roosevelt himself didn't even live to see age 65.
Right.
Lyndon Johnson in the 1960s sets up the Medicare system with the retirement age at 65. Well, get this. I'd like your listeners to picture Lyndon Johnson in their minds for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you realize Lyndon Johnson did not live to see age 65? He looked like hell. I mean, the guy looked like he was in his 80s when he died at age 64. Just Jack Daniels will do that to you in the Vietnam War. But the point is, as a rich country, we begin making promises, and then we end up not really being able to fulfill them. And so, you know, in the earlier segment, I mentioned, you know, several factors that begin to bite, and that's what we're feeling. Now, certainly today, we are wondering as a country and grappling with the question of patriotism in a multicultural country. There was one of the public schools in Brooklyn last year, right before Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. decided to ban the Thanksgiving celebration. Why? Because they thought it would show insensitivity to certain minority communities. Well, look, you can blame all sorts of ills on what followed Christopher Columbus and what followed the Pilgrims and the Founding Fathers and so on and so forth. But at some point, you have to embrace some aspect of American history.
Absolutely.
And find pride in it. And if you don't, then why would you expect any immigrant to have pride in the history of the country that he or she has just come to? Frankly, I think blaming Christopher Columbus and Thanksgiving for all the misery that may have followed is like blaming Marco Polo because yuppie restaurants will charge $30 for spaghetti in New York. You know, we've got to look at some of these founders of American history and say, yeah, they had warts, yeah, they had problems, but that doesn't mean that we should indict our past. We should embrace our past and, of course, point out the flaws that our founding fathers may have had.
Absolutely. And again, later in the program, I do plan on getting to the way you describe patriotism. That's really a fantastic piece in the book. Let's just talk about, you touched on it before, globalization and free trade. What impact do they have, or what are the upsides for a nation's survival and prosperity when they have free trade agreements, or are you against them?
No, I'm in favor of free trade, and a country cannot stay rich or achieve wealth without embracing trade. Countries that separate themselves are a little bit like, this is a bit of an analogy, but you might remember, was it 20 years ago, there was something in Arizona they called the biosphere. Right?
Yes.
They created a kind of huge terrarium, you know, several acres large, and they covered it over, and they had these like astronauts, or maybe they called them bionauts, and they went inside, and they were going to just live on whatever they grew and not have any contact with the outside world. Well, pretty soon the air got fetid and polluted, and before you know it, those poor inhabitants, the bionauts, were, you know, banging on the doors,
right,
begging to get out and choking and coughing. Well, that's pretty much what happens to a country that doesn't permit itself to trade with others, and that's what's happened. That's why North Korea is such a fetid place, and that's why Cuba is such an awful place. So yes, we need trade, but there is the question of whether trade can undermine communities. And I think the answer is yes. So we got to deal with that. You know, for too long, those of us, and I include myself, those of us who've been advocates of NAFTA and free trade agreements, we haven't paid enough attention to the victims of free trade. And there are victims of free trade. When the U.S. used to produce shoes and used to produce wristwatches, and now, of course, there are a couple companies left, but President Obama went to the Nike headquarters about a year or two ago to give a speech. Well, if he'd looked down at his feet, he wouldn't have seen Made in USA. And so it becomes a complicated issue. And look, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, Republican and socialist, have tapped into this deep anxiety. So we really do need to figure out a way to engage in trade, but understand that the free market is not a pain-free market, and that we do need to improve our education system, our training system, so that people who are displaced have some hope and are not merely told, well, all in all, it's good for us.
Yeah. Now, on moving along to the next item on that list is the rising debt loads. Page 79 of the book, you have a chapter or a section called Why Public Debt is Worse Than Private Debt. Maybe you could elaborate. I mean, it would seem to be obvious to anyone in the financial world, but maybe you can explain.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So when you think about private debt, mm-hmm. If you or I decide to go on some terrible shopping spree, and we buy everything that Amazon has to offer, or everything that QVC has to offer, and we die bankrupt, when they bury us in the ground, the debt collectors can't come after our children or after our neighbors.
Right.
You know, the private debt dies with whoever incurs the debt. Now, are there some exceptions? Yeah, we can concoct some exceptions to this. But basically, your children are not burdened with the debts that you leave. But with a country, it's very different. If congressmen and senators and presidents rack up trillions of dollars of debt as they've done, when they die or when they leave office, the debt doesn't evaporate. Who does it go to? It goes to taxpayers and future taxpayers, and our children and grandchildren are then burdened with it. And do those children and grandchildren have a voice? If they're under the age of 18, they don't have a voice in this. So you have an incentive for current politicians to spend lots of money, because why? It'll get them applause in the near term. They'll be able to say, hey, I built a new bridge, or hey, I built a new airport, or I paid for this new program. They have a ribbon-cutting ceremony, and they get the applause, and they get the cupcakes at the ceremony, but they don't have to pay the debt. You know, people who never had the opportunity to vote will pay the debt. So that's what makes public debt actually more dangerous than private debt. We do know that all you have to do is walk down Midtown Manhattan and you'll see the debt clock spinning along.
Yes, that's right.
Tens of trillions of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Now, in the book, you talk about that besides for the terrible effects when debt piles up, it also affects the work ethic. You actually have an interesting statistic where you point out that two decades ago in 94, two-thirds of teens took summer jobs, and today less than half of teens take summer jobs.
Oh. That's right, and that again is one of the prices of prosperity, hence the name of the book, The Price of Prosperity.
Right.
I'm not that old a person. I'm not a grandpa yet.
Okay.
I don't think of myself as one of these old geezer types. But, in the old days, kids got after-school jobs and they got summer jobs because, the parents could use a little extra money. Or if the kid was going to go to the movies, instead of asking mom or dad for the money or to pay for an Uber car, the kids would try to pay for it with money they may have saved. Well, that's not common anymore. Most kids do not have an after-school job. Most kids do not have a summer job. Now, is that all bad? No. In many cases, they don't have summer jobs or after-school jobs because they're taking an extra school course after school. maybe they're learning the saxophone or perfecting their painting skills or taking a higher math class. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's all honorable. But I think for too long we've sneered at and disdained what kids learn in a part-time minimum wage job. And it's not about the skill of working at McDonald's and learning how to put frozen French fries in a steel basket and lowering it into bubbling oil. That's not really what they learn. What they're learning is the discipline of how to show up and the expectation to show up and be reliable and be a team player. In The Price of Prosperity, I cite a very interesting study from Northeastern University in Boston, which showed that especially among at-risk youth, especially among poor African-American students, those who have after-school jobs and summer jobs are less likely to get involved in gangs, in drugs, teenage pregnancy. So there are all sorts of good characteristics that we learn, and I'm afraid, you know, we've kind of sneered at that over time, figuring that, well, you know, you might as well do something else. Look, when I was a kid, I worked in the supermarket. I worked in the dairy department. Did I learn anything? Yeah, I guess I learned two things. First of all, if you work in the dairy department, wear a sweater, even in the summer. It gets a little chilly. Secondly, I learned, and this is important, and I hope all your listeners take this down. This is what I learned in spending, you know, months or years in the dairy department at the ShopRite supermarket. The freshest milk is in the back of the shelf. Now, that's true. It's true. Now, is that, you know, is that more valuable than an extra course in calculus or algebra? Maybe it's not, but what I really learned was that I had to punch the clock and I had to show up. And that put me in good stead when I became an adult in my 20s and 30s, and there was no question that I would show up to work on time and do what the boss asked of me. Yeah. I think one of the reasons why so many employers these days bellyache about millennials is that very few millennials have grown up in learning the discipline of showing up on time and staying through the day.
You know, I remember when I was working on my first resume. I mean, now I'm in the workforce already over 25 years. And I remember discussing with an advisor, should I put down that I was a waiter in a camp? And this advisor thankfully said, absolutely put that down. He said, you know, don't try to hide anything. Show them you're willing to roll up your sleeves and do whatever it takes.
Well, I think that's right. And, you know, my wife was a waitress when she was younger, and it's become very valuable because she's always much better at figuring out the right tip to give than I am. And also, you know, we believe in self-help. If we're at a restaurant and the service is bad and we need another fork, you know, both of us feel very confident to walk over to the other table and take the fork that we need because we've been there, we've been on both sides of the table. I used to cook hot dogs at the beach of the Jersey Shore. Is that a terribly valuable skill? I don't think so, but it taught me that even if it was 95 degrees and 95% humidity on the boardwalk, that my job was to be there.
The voice that you hear is none other than Todd Buchholz. He worked in the White House under George H.W. Bush, and he actually just released his newest book is The Price of Prosperity. He actually had another previous release, New Ideas from Dead Economists. I'm sure that was a lot of fun as well. But we're going to continue to discuss with Todd about his new book. But first, I just want to remind the listeners that one lucky listener is going to win a free copy of his book. All you have to do is send a text to 66866 and put in the word bottom line as one word. Yes, it's a misspelling. I'm sorry. But put in one word bottom line, text it to 66866, and you'll automatically be entered. For everyone else, you're not a loser if you don't win it. You could go and pick up the book. You can go to Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and it's available at bookstores nationwide. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile-friendly? And does it have the 2016 look? Well, look no further than WebsiteWithBrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500 or visit websitewithbrains.com. The experienced team at Website with Brains will plan, write, design, and program a stunning and informative website that combines simplicity and flexibility. Best of all, Website with Brains can have your new website up and running within 4 to 6 weeks. Get ready to look great online and take your business to the next level. See some of the attractive, user-friendly sites built by Website with Brains by visiting websitewithbrains.com. Then give Website with Brains a call at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzchak Saftless right here on 77 WABC and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. By the way, you could follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Yitzchak Saftless. Any way you type it will probably come up. And the one of the best benefits is that you'll get to see who our upcoming guests are, because we usually don't announce them the previous week because we work on so many fantastic guests. And we many times it comes down to the week prior till we actually know who the special guest will be. I also want to take this opportunity to remind the audience of some of the great interviews we had in the past. Dan Sullivan, president of Strategic Coach, Captain Sully Sullenberger of Miracle on the Hudson fame, Eric Asimov, the chief wine critic at the New York Times, Stephen Aldrich, chief product officer at GoDaddy, Jenna Wolf, lifestyle and fitness expert, Jeffrey Hazlett, Bill O'Reilly, Josh Moore, Peter Shankman. Wow, the list goes on. All the previous episodes are available by going to WABCBizRadio.com, WABCBizRadio.com. And this evening, my guest is Todd Buchholz, the author of the brand new release, The Price of Prosperity. I'm going to jump into where you talk about a fantastic idea, the idea about patriotism. And in fact, I'm going to read on page 299. I quote, "Reagan was not just a patriot. He was also what I term a patriotist. There is a difference. A patriot feels a love and affection for his country. A patriotist believes that it is a good thing to feel love and affection for one's country." Maybe you can elaborate on that.
Yes. A patriot, well, look at it this way, a simple analogy. Most of us, I hope all of us listening, love our mothers or have loved our mothers.
Yes.
And it's one thing to love your mother. It's another thing to say, you know, as a matter of principle, I think people should love their mothers. And there's a difference there. And what's been under attack in the United States has not simply been the question of, do you love your country? Do you admire America and what it stands for? There's almost a majority among academics, especially in liberal arts and social sciences, who would say, you know, it is wrong to admire and love your country as a matter of principle. You should feel no more affection and no more willingness to wave your flag than to wave the flag of another country. After all, why should you think your country is better than some other country? All countries have good aspects, all have bad aspects. Why should you have borders? Why should you have history? We're all in this one world together.
Well, Todd, I have to interrupt. It's so painful to even hear you describe, you know, make that case.
In fact, there's a best-selling history by a gentleman named Howard Zinn, A People's History of the United States. And I'm not encouraging people to buy Zinn's book, but I can tell you many of your favorite movie stars and philosophers are big fans of Zinn, and Zinn specifically says, let's do away with a national anthem. Let's do away with a flag.
Terrible.
And I think that's wrong.
Of course.
It's wrong if you care whether your country persists and whether it sustains itself. If you don't care, if you're like, you know what, I could take it or leave it. You know, if it's not the United States, I'm still going to stay on this landmass. My latitude and longitude may not, you know, they're not going to change. I'm just going to stay in the same plot of land, and I don't really care what they call it. If that's your attitude, then sure, who needs American history? But I think it's a terrible mistake if you think your country is worth admiring. Now, I often this gets into when people speak as I have. Unfortunately, it sometimes devolves into, oh, that sounds like immigrant bashing. And I feel absolutely apart from that view. In fact, I think there should be an obligation on immigrants, but also on people who were born here. And here's the obligation. I believe that immigrants should embrace American history. They should be learning and admiring what is good in American history. But I also think that those of us who are lucky enough to be born here should look at the immigrants who come over and say, you know what, you may have just arrived yesterday, whether from Mexico or Colombia or Poland, but you have just as much right to celebrate Thanksgiving as any old Yankee who can trace our ancestors back to the Mayflower. So it's a dual obligation. And in The Price of Prosperity, I suggest, for instance, that anyone who wants to immigrate to the United States or even get a green card to the United States, they should have their passport stamped not just at JFK or LAX. They should have their passport stamped at least five national monuments or historical locations, whether it's the Paul Revere House in Boston or Monticello in Virginia or Ellis Island. You know, we can come up with a pretty long list.
Right.
But if you don't have enough interest in visiting America's great historical sites, then frankly, I don't have much interest in your becoming a fellow citizen.
Yeah.
And by the way, I would put that same obligation on American students. If you're a student and you want a loan from your fellow taxpayer in order to pay for college, then I would require you, too, to travel through the country and get your passport stamped at various historical locations. And if you don't have the resourcefulness to figure out how to, and I don't want to hear a lot of excuses, oh, it's so expensive. No, you can get a Greyhound bus. You can, I don't care if you hitchhike, we'll give you a special exemption, take Uber, whatever it takes. If you don't have the resourcefulness to get yourself around the country to visit some historical locations, then I don't think you've got the resourcefulness to use a college degree in a way that's going to be productive for you, your family, or your fellow citizens.
Todd, you put it so well. Oh, you put it so well. You touched on this earlier, and this was mentioned in the Wall Street Journal article. You talk about when rich nations, and let me get the exact quote here, when rich nations begin to shatter, everyone has a comfy bed, but fewer people have a reason to get out of it. And again, I know you touched on it earlier, and you've been talking about it throughout the show, but the work ethic. Yeah, I mean, I guess this is part of the work ethic, but it's really even more than that. It's the part that when we're wealthy, then we take things for granted, and we really, what drives someone to go out there and get ahead? So maybe you can elaborate on that.
Well, that's right. If you think about it, there are millions of Americans. The statistic, the nerdy statistic that, of course, is reported by the Department of Labor Statistics is called the worker participation rate. What percentage of people get jobs? And that number has been falling down for the last 20 years because millions of Americans wake up each morning, look in the mirror and say, a job, work.
Right.
And then they say, it's not really my field. They move on to something else. The number of people on disability has nearly doubled. There was an article, front page article in the New York Times several years ago that showed that nearly every retired worker of the Long Island Railway retired on disability. It's front page of the New York Times.
Wow, that
You can find quotations from the Attorney General who investigated this. Now think about that. If the disability rates in the U.S. have been going up so quickly, wouldn't that imply that the jobs have become more and more dangerous? But does that make sense to you? If people used to be digging ditches and tunnels and backbreaking labor. Now people are on disability for not digging tunnels, but carpal tunnel syndrome.
Doesn't make any sense.
Because they've been sitting in their pajamas on, working on their blog on their laptop. Now, I'm being a little unfair, but I also want to make it colorful enough so that it's memorable. But jobs have become safer than ever before.
Right.
Meatpacking plants used to have whirring blades that would cut off fingers and limbs. Well, the unions and the employers
and OSHA, sure, sure,
exactly. But it's been great. You know, one of the great. We can have a long debate about unions: are they good or they're bad, and so on. But I'll tell you one thing, especially when it comes to, for instance, meatpacking plants. Unions and companies have done a really good job working together to make the workplace safer. And yet, if you look at the disability numbers, it looks like, my God, it looks like everyone must be working in a war zone. And that has more to do with, I think, a work ethic and a sense of honesty than it does with actual disability based on the job.
Great point. The voice that you hear is that of Todd Buchholz. His new book, The Price of Prosperity. In fact, he was kind enough. One lucky winner is going to win a copy of his book. All you have to do is send a text to 66866. Put in the word bottom line as one word. Send it to 66866, and you will automatically be entered to win. His book is available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and at bookstores nationwide. Again, it's called The Price of Prosperity. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Author, radio host, and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis, has written the essential book for the success-driven, fast-paced professional. So, What's the Bottom Line? Is a must-read for marketing your business and building your personal brand. Former U.S. Congressman and media executive Bob Turner describes So, What's the Bottom Line? As a compass to guide the experienced executive or marketing novice through any step in planning or organizing a selling strategy. So, What's the Bottom Line? Is available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookstores nationwide. Get your copy today.
Did you know that dissatisfied employees cost American businesses over $300 billion each year? Now there's a solution. TeamAhead.co. TeamAhead is a complete solution to help companies of all sizes build a positive corporate culture. TeamAhead helps today's thought leaders make their vision a legacy. TeamAhead's comprehensive approach helps you communicate your vision and engage your employees through many channels, including print, digital, sweepstakes, video, events, social media, and a custom website. Call 800-890-1807, extension 3505 to find out how TeamAhead can transform your business's corporate culture, leading to greater productivity and revenue. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co. Team Ahead will enhance your workplace productivity, boost morale, and successfully communicate your vision. Don't let your company's strongest asset be its biggest liability. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co to fuel your winning workplace today.
And we're back. Mind Your Business on 77 WABC and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. We're wrapping up a great edition of Mind Your Business. Our guest this evening is Todd G. Buchholz. The Price of Prosperity, that's the name of his new book, Why Rich Nations Fail and How to Renew Them. Todd's experience, I mean, he was a former White House Director of Economic Policy under George H.W. Bush. And we're going to talk a little politics. I guess we saved the best for last. So let's jump right in. The presidential race, it's in full swing. We know the conventions are right around the corner, happening in real time now. What are the economic policies of the two candidates? I guess if you're able to explain it in a kind of simplistic way.
Well, boy, these are tough questions. Yeah. I'm almost tempted to say, well, dumb and dumber. But no, I don't think that's fair to either of the candidates. Look, Hillary Clinton will continue the policies of President Obama. She'll expand on them. If you think those policies have led to a very slow recovery, stagnant wages and a lack of confidence, well, I think you can be assured you're going to get more of the same. And in fact, Hillary Clinton wants to expand Obamacare. If you think Obamacare is working well, then you should be happy. Now, but she wants to expand it so that those as young as 55 would either be covered by Obamacare or even by Medicare. Now, she hasn't explained how she's going to pay for that, and I think that's a pretty big challenge to the national debt, but that's her basic view. When you look at Donald Trump, there's a great deal of uncertainty. It's not clear. Donald Trump clearly does believe in lower taxes than Hillary Clinton does and has promised tax cuts. His trade policies are uncertain. Clearly, the idea of building a wall, a virtual wall with China, and a literal wall with Mexico, you know, would not be seen as pro-free trade. He has, as I said, proposed tax cuts, but he seems to be kind of refining them over time. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty, which is why on the Republican side, Donald Trump has been trying, but without complete success, to unify the Republican Party, because people are very uncertain what his policies would actually mean.
Yeah, well, let's actually move to the great discussion about minimum wage. Now, we know Hillary wants to raise the minimum wage nationwide. Trump favors leaving it in the hands of the states. What's your take on that?
Well, my view is that the real minimum wage is zero. It's not $12 an hour or $15 an hour. What do I mean the minimum wage is zero? The minimum wage is zero because you can't force, at least in America right now, you can't force an employer to hire you. And so if you price the minimum wage too high, companies are going to say, you know what, I don't need another worker. Let's not pay that worker anything. Send him or her home, or don't hire him or her. Instead, I'll buy an iPad. And if you go, as I do, I often am flying through JFK and through LaGuardia Airport, mm-hmm. and you see the number of food stands and dining establishments at those airports where pretty much it's all iPads. We see fast food chains and others moving to that as well. Why? Because it's very expensive to hire workers. And remember, even if you're paying someone a minimum wage, you also are paying, if you're the employer, you're paying into insurance schemes, you're paying into unemployment compensation. So even though the headline number may be $15 an hour, it probably costs that employer something closer to $25 an hour to hire that young person. And then you have to ask yourself, what is it that an 18 or 19-year-old knows such that he or she can deliver $25 of value an hour to an employer? So I much prefer a state arrangement. And having said that, I'm quite happy that there's a variation among the states and among cities, because I think that will provide a good test case. If Seattle wants to raise its minimum wage to $20 an hour or $30 or $40 an hour, well, that's fine. And we'll find out in 5 or 10 years whether it has reduced the number of jobs or whether it has increased the number of jobs.
Yeah. Now, what are your suggestions for how America can renew its economic status today?
Yes, well, in the last chapter of The Price of Prosperity, I propose certain policies. Now, one question that we have, or one ailment we have in this country now, is a kind of lack of mobility geographically. In other words, people, especially younger people, are stuck in place. The probability of a 20-something moving to another county or moving to another state to get a job is lower than it's pretty much ever been. I was at a meeting and a middle-aged executive came over to me, and she was an engineer. She said, "What am I going to do about my son, Joshy?" I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, he graduated from college, but he can't get a job." And this conversation took place around 2010. Mm-hmm. And the unemployment rate in Florida, where Joshy lived, was about 10%. I said, "Well, tell Joshie to get on a plane or a Greyhound bus and get himself to North Dakota, where the unemployment rate's nearly zero. Or I said, does Joshie like snow? She said, yes. I said, well, get to Vermont. The unemployment rate was about 4%. So I think we need policies that will make it easier for people to go where the jobs are, and we should be issuing, whether it's mobility tax credits or other forms of inducement. Right now, if someone goes to the unemployment office and is looking for a job, they're pretty much only shown jobs in their district. I would like them to see a menu of jobs throughout the country so that they can get a sense of achievement and accomplishment as opposed to waiting for jobs to come to them.
As we approach the close of another great edition of Mind Your Business, and again, if you're just tuning in, it will be available in a couple of days up on WABCBizRadio.com. My guest this evening was Todd G. Buchholz. His new book, The Price of Prosperity, Why Rich Nations Fail and How to Renew Them, is available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, bookstores nationwide. One lucky winner will win it this evening by sending a text to 66866, putting in the word bottom line as one word, bottom line, 66866, and you'll have a chance to win it. Todd, any final takeaways for the listeners of Mind Your Business?
Well, I learn a lot from your listeners, to be honest, and so I tweet at econtodd. And so if your listeners have ideas that I should be aware of, I mean, I don't know everything. Yeah, I've written a 350-page book that I think is pretty smart, but mm-hmm. It's a small amount of the intelligence that your listenership has. So, send me a tweet at econtodd, or you can follow me at toddbuchholz.com, and we can keep this conversation going. And I very much appreciate the opportunity to be on the program this evening.
Well, Todd, thank you so much for joining me here. I just want to remind the audience to stay tuned for John Batchelor. He's up next on 77 WABC. And tune in again next Sunday night at 11 p.m. for another great edition of Mind Your Business on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night from 11 until 12 for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Saflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night from 11 until midnight on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.